Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast, coming from Dallas, Texas, Los Angeles, and Sacramento, California. Here's Skylar Teo, Aaron Alvarado, and David Stauffer.
Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast. Fresh off of the news of the 2017 Best Picture winner, La La Land.
Wow. Wow.
How does this happen, Aaron?
I don't know, man. How I don't know.
This? I just turned off the TV. I'm still reeling.
Yeah. Easily the most shocking moment in Oscars history. Like, there's no doubt. No doubt about it.
And you know what? You couldn't have scripted this, because it was down to La La Land or Moonlight. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are the only two options.
The only two options, right? So Skylar and I mean, we like to put bets on stuff, right? Like, I made a fair amount of money off of him from the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Well, he still hasn't paid you as far as I know, right? Yeah.
He actually did Venmo me. Good for him. I haven't gotten tonight's money. But we had a $10 on he had $10 on Denzel, and I had $10 on Casey, right? So I got that.
Smart.
And I was really close to taking him at $30. I was thinking Moonlight, and he was going La La Land, but I just couldn't quite commit to it, because it was like, you know what? The Academy can't help themselves. They're going to award La La Land, right? So these are the two most likely ones. So what are the chances that they hand them the wrong envelope? And the wrong envelope was the previous award, which was Emma Stone for La La Land. And that poor Warren Beatty opens this envelope.
Oh, man. I thought he was just hamming it up. That's what I thought was happening.
It looked like it, but you rewatch it and you can see in his eyes it was, oh no, this is a mistake. Yeah. And he shows it to her to be like, what are we supposed to do here? And she just goes, La La Land.
Well, yeah, he knew that something was wrong because he saw Emma Stone's name there, and it shouldn't have been there, obviously. It's not an actress award. So they really screwed poor Warren Beatty. And it made him look like just a confused old man. And
really,
I mean, he probably is a confused old man, but he doesn't need the wrong envelope to help that process along. So, but nice work, Academy.
You know what I love. He recovered nicely, though. By getting to the mic and making it clear, this is not my fault.
Well, after that huge bomb of a movie that he had last year, this could have been the death blow to his career.
Well, I mean, you can say that in this year's Oscars, that rules don't apply. that's the name of his terrible film. So the Oscars, play by play here. The guys go up there. Imagine being in the industry. Now, these guys didn't look particularly old, but still, your whole life, a Best Picture Oscar. I mean, they can't have – I mean, this isn't like they said Hacksaw Ridge, right? Like, or they said Fences, where they're like, check the envelope again. We're pretty sure we didn't win, right?
Right.
Like, this is – those guys thought they probably had it in the bag.
Yeah.
And so they
went up there with the speech.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
They were expecting it.
Well, they've been giving this speech to the award circuit for the last 2 months, right? Like, I mean, they've been they were ready for this. They realized Moonlight was, I'm sure, the other contender here. But, like, they weren't surprised. We'll put it that way. No. They were grateful. They were not surprised.
Right.
And so the guy gets up there, goes on about his wife and how much she's helped him become the man that he is today, which is not an Oscar winner.
Ouch. I mean, there was a moment when you could see his heartbreak. Like, when they showed him what it was supposed to be in the real envelope. Like,
so how do you handle that, right? So the telecast is wrapping up, right? Like, the whole production crew is in the control room, and they're like, okay, let's you know, he's finishing his speech, let's wrap it up, let's get the orchestra on. I mean, they don't usually play off the Best Picture, but you know, let's get the orchestra ready. We're gonna cut to the final commercial that the advertisers have paid for. Let's do this. And then they bring out the envelope with the real winner to him, right? And the poor member, who was it they handed it to him? I don't even remember.
I don't know, but there was so much confusion back there. Yeah. I noticed something was going on. I didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
But there was definitely commotion going on behind them as he was making his speech. And it turns out They're giving the right envelope. Oh, God, that's heartbreaking.
It's so terrible. So the people with the envelopes and the people going back and forth, they said were these the Student Academy Award winners. I hope they sent out one of the students. To like, oh, no. Hey, do you mind running this out to that guy and letting him know he didn't win an Oscar?
Oh, this could be the greatest prank in movie history. Can you imagine?
Yeah. Well,
if this was on purpose?
Well, I mean, gosh, it feels a little bit like this couldn't have actually happened, right? Like there's a little bit like, no. You know, we talk about this like one someone. This was someone's job, right? The classic, you had one job to do. And I just feel like this is too calculated to have been a real mistake because yeah. It's La La Land. The only other one, no one was like surprised, right? Like that's why I just like, if they had said Lion, right? Again, it's right. Just... You know, then people would have been losing their minds right. Because Lion won a, you know, best. Well,
the funny thing is, when they said La La Land, I could already hear the blogs going up, people posting the blogs.
Yeah.
And then when they changed to Moonlight, you could just hear the delete keys around the entire internet going crazy.
Do you know how many published and then unpublished Medium articles went
up? Oh, I guarantee you there was a slew of Twitter posts about how racist the Academy is.
Well, So this is what was weird for me is, so the person behind the scenes that had to have been like, oh no, is the one person that knew the awards, which was the PricewaterhouseCoopers guy, the PwC right. guy, right?
Yeah.
Guy or girl or group, right? So PricewaterhouseCoopers is the accounting agency, the finance firm that handles the actual ballots, the counting, the,
right.
you know, the awards. And so they're the only people they say are the only ones who know, right? So there had to have been a group of them that sat there, and as soon as they said La La Land, had to have looked at each other and went, oh,
like, well, I imagine, like, it was just a guy eating a donut, and then as he hears it, like, the donut just falls right out of his mouth, and he makes a beeline for the stage. Or it was probably one of those cookies that fell from the sky with the parachute.
Oh, gosh. I can't imagine. I'm sitting here. Okay, so let me paint a picture for you of what I'm doing here. I'm on the couch. I've been watching the Oscars all night with my wife, and she's on her computer working. I've got a Lego set on my desk, the one I'm recording on this right now. That's almost complete, and I'm like, I'm just gonna finish this up, right? And so I'm looking at the TV, and I'm like, okay, La La Land, cool. And I turn around. And I'm kind of putting my thing together, looking around. Okay, yeah, you know, bald white man accepting award, very excited. Cut to, you know, deer in the headlights, wife shot, right? And I'm putting together, and then I realize that things are starting, you know, the gap in the speech and the music, and something was going on. And I turn around, and then he says, "No, actually, Moonlight wins." And I thought at first, I was like, "Oh, this is just a really, really poorly executed, like, the Academy gave us this, but we feel like Moonlight should win because right. Oscars are no longer so white, so we're right. actually going to give you our Oscars, even right. though we won," right? Like, I thought that's what this was.
I thought it was like everyone's a winner type of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Everybody
yeah.
wins an Oscar
yes,
tonight.
Like a really poor Pinewood Derby, everyone gets an award, you know? And so I'm thinking he's doing this. I was like, dude, don't do this. Don't do this. Yeah. This is it's a bad look. They don't want it. Moonlight does not want you doing this. Right. No, it's just a really bad thing that people do sometimes. It was like Adele broke her Grammy in half to give half right. of it to Beyonce. Beyonce doesn't want half of your Grammy, no. Adele. She doesn't want that. And nor does Moonlight want to share, right? Like, and yeah. so when he starts doing this, I was like, this is weird, dude. Like, yeah. just wrap up your speech, right? And then he's like, yeah. no, and he shows the card. And the camera guy is right on it, right? Like, it cuts to the shot where it says Moonlight. And that's the moment, right? When I first realized, like, yeah. oh, this isn't a publicity stunt.
No.
They gave, like, Warren Beatty and
Faye Dunaway.
Yeah. Bonnie and Clyde. Classic yeah. movie, by the way. They said La La Land, and the card said Moonlight. So I'm immediately trying to be like, how did that happen? And what are they going to do now? Oh, my gosh. The crushed look on the faces of people at La La Land when yeah. they had to hand back the Oscars, which had had their fingerprints all over them.
Incredible. I mean, absolutely mind-blowing.
I can't believe that happened.
No, my mouth was wide open. My jaw was on the floor.
Oh,
I just kept blinking, like, is this really happening?
What so on earth? Kimmel comes with the Steve Harvey joke, just impeccable timing.
Yeah.
And you know what? You know who's the real loser here, other than the La La Land people?
Yeah.
is Kimmel's perfect night being dashed?
So no kidding, he's gonna take the blame for this.
Well, yeah, or something, right? I mean, like the headlines coming out of this should have been La La Land wins as expected or whatever, right? And Kimmel does one of the first truly good Oscar hosting duties, like, of recent memory.
Yeah.
I thought he was better than Chris Rock. I thought he was certainly better than even Ellen, who's, you know, did a fine, good-natured show. Gosh, I think he's done better than any of the people I can remember doing. But Conan, Letterman.
What about James Franco and Anne Hathaway?
Nope, they're still number one. Excuse me. Kimmel was perfect, as perfect as you can be for an Oscar. It's a thankless job. I mean, you're talking a 3.5 hour to 4 hour presentation. Mm-hmm. It's not the best. This is mostly a humorless group, and it's just not a great stage for comedy to be executed. So it's you know, you don't say no to the gig for the most part. I guess last year probably. I think I don't know. I'm sure there have been people who have said no, but. You know, in his case, you've got to take it. And I felt like he did as good as he could have without doing the Billy Crystal thing of relying on these video gags.
Right.
He did.
I think he did an admirable job. And it's a huge opportunity for him as well.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you crush the Oscars, then you're a hero, basically.
Yeah. And I felt like he did.
Yeah, I think he did a really good job. Okay. I don't blame him for what happened at the end. Not his fault.
No, certainly not. I mean, I love how he even said, he's like, I knew I was going to screw this up somehow. So let's give that the Oscar reactions real quick. Moonlight won, something that you've been talking to Skylar and I about, warning us. I felt like coming into today, I felt this was the most I felt like Moonlight was probably going to win. But I didn't feel strong enough to actually make that bet. Yeah. Right. Like, I was still leaning on the Academy's whiteness. But like in the aftermath of Oscar So White. And again, I don't want to say this is solely the reason why Moonlight won.
No, it's not. It's a good movie.
And you watched it today for the first time.
Yeah, no, I just finished it a couple hours ago, and it's a really good movie.
Okay.
It wasn't my favorite movie of the year, which is fine, but it's a really good movie. There's nothing wrong with it at all.
Yeah.
I think that it's very fair to call it one of the best movies of the year.
Okay.
So, yeah, I have no problem with it winning whatsoever.
Now, we know with the backlash of last year's Oscars, you know, that there was going to be some steps taken to make sure that it wasn't going to be, you know, that was going to happen again. And we've talked about this before. I think the films that were nominated, you know, the films that featured a lot more people of color were like 100% deserving. And they're all are films I really, really enjoyed. And it felt authentic. It didn't feel too forced.
Well, the funny thing is, the one movie that probably didn't deserve to be there, Hacksaw Ridge.
Yeah.
starring mainly a white cast.
Yep.
Directed by an Australian. So.
Kind of an Australian.
Yeah, exactly.
An anti-Semite, for sure.
Oh, gosh. I don't understand how he's working it. I really don't get it.
They've forgiven him.
I don't understand.
They've forgiven him. He hasn't forgiven them, by the way.
No, of course not. Oh, could you imagine if they called Hacksaw Ridge and it turns out they weren't the winner?
So
the tirade. So,
If it were Hacksaw, oh my gosh, could you imagine the slew of anti-Semitic slurs to come from Bill Gibson's mouth? If that had happened, I do feel like it would have been a calculated thing.
Yeah, probably. Well, so the whole thing with Moonlight taking it eventually. Yeah. Here's my feelings.
Yeah.
It's a deserving movie. It deserves to win. Deserves to be nominated for sure. You made some great points about La La Land being, you know. Hollywood loving itself.
Yeah.
So that's the primary reason.
Yeah.
It's a feel-good movie.
Yes.
You know, so it had everything was going in its favor. But I noticed within the last 2 or 3 weeks, there was an inordinate amount of hit jobs on La La Land. Like, it was everywhere.
Yeah.
You saw a ton of hit pieces on how the movie is racist.
Yep.
The movie was not diverse. the movie was celebrating mediocre whiteness. Like, yeah, that's the one that I saw a lot. So,
which was remarkable.
It's crazy.
It's remarkable to see these campaigns take place, because both of these films were released several months ago. Right. And had the Oscars been taking place right after that, La La Land right. probably wins.
I think you're right. So, yeah, with that in mind, I thought that there's some sort of, there was something going on. You know, obviously yeah. I had no insider information. I'm not privy to that. Right. But it just felt like momentum. Something was in the air. And I felt like La La Land was ripe for being upset. Because it was an upset. Like, make no mistake about it. La La Land was supposed to win.
Yeah. No, yeah. 14 nominations, picture. Man.
Yeah.
And it won Best Director. Yeah. It's very rare. We've seen it happen now a couple times with the Argo win, where the Best Director isn't also, you know, the Best Picture. It happened with Alfonso Cuarón when he got
Moon,
when he got director for Gravity.
Yeah, Gravity.
Yeah. And then the Best Picture that year was...
was that 2013?
Yeah. It was 12 Years a Slave.
Yeah, you're right.
And so, because Steve McQueen didn't win director.
Right.
I remember that correctly, right? I'm pretty sure.
I think that sounds right.
So, this is, it's remarkable that there was backlash. I noted this trend of like instant love and hype, and then the wave of backlash. Mm-hmm. And then if you wait long enough, there's backlash to the backlash, right?
Right.
La La Land, the backlash was almost paused. It didn't come out for a little while, and then it mounted, right? Then it really started going, and it wasn't there long enough to have a backlash to the backlash. I started seeing a little bit of it on Twitter. I started seeing some tweets, namely Eric Vespi from Ain't It Cool News was talking about how he wanted La La Land to win just to stick it to the film snobs, because the film snobs, in his opinion, were the ones that were talking about how La La Land was, you know, so white and... and racist, which I disagree with I enjoyed the movie.
Yeah.
I would have rather Manchester win. I would rather several other movies win. But like, I enjoyed La La Land.
What it was. So when
but I'm also a white millennial, and it's you know,
the movie was made for you. Let's be honest.
I mean, truthfully, it was.
The funny thing is, when the movie first came out, I like to troll you and Skylar about this stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So when the movie first came out, this is what I said. I said that the movie's too white.
Yeah, you did.
There's no way it can win.
Yeah,
we laughed. I warned you guys.
Yeah.
But
and look who's laughing now.
Yeah, you know, maybe I know something that you guys don't know.
Yeah. Well, I wish I was privileged to have that sense.
Can't help it. I was born with it.
Well, the other thing about La La Land too, this whole idea of it, of the like, super like, hypey love fest that it was getting, and then the backlash, it led to one of the great Saturday Night Live skits of the season, which was this, you know, Cecily Strong and Beck Bennett arresting Aziz Ansari. For saying that he only kind of liked La La Land. Did you see this bit?
No, I don't watch that.
Oh, it's really funny. They were going on and on and on. He's like, I don't know, it just feels like a movie made for white people. Like, white people? And then they show the clips with that has the black people in the background being like, is he what? Is John Legend white? Like, is, you know, and they go through it, the whole thing. And it's hilarious because, you know, they're making fun of the people that are outraged that people would dislike it, right?
Right.
It is a good bit.
Well, one of the sad things about the whole criticism of La La Land was that John Legend was getting swept up in it. People were calling him a sellout, a literal sellout, for being in the movie playing a sellout. So that's actually kind of a bad thing. Obviously, that's a bad thing. It's hurtful, man. Like, what he wanted to be in the film. They cast him in it. He was really good in the role.
Yeah, he was.
Why would you sweep him up in that? It's not his fault, you know?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, well, I mean, yeah. We saw this happen to RG3.
Sometimes your friends can be too white, I guess.
I want to talk highlights of the Oscars. Now, you don't ever watch these.
No.
Mm-mm. It seems like you didn't start to watch it, and then you did because we were texting so much about it.
What happened was we were watching Homeland, my wife and I, and then it was over. So I was like, I need something else to watch.
So
the Oscars, I guess I'll turn on the Oscars.
I wish they didn't mean anything, but we've talked about this before. They do mean something, only because they're considered the industry's biggest award, and people do get a bigger paycheck. I did see some hate on Casey Affleck for being a, quote, woman beater.
Well, the funniest thing now is, like, it's not, it's been twisted.
I know.
To where I just saw a headline that someone said Casey Affleck has sexually assaulted two women.
Yeah.
And he just won an Oscar. It's like, what?
I know.
That was never the story. That wasn't ever the story. So it gets pretty nasty out there. There was a another thing that, you know, so it's great. I like the fact that the Oscars are getting more diverse and that more people other than just white men or white women are winning. I really appreciate that. I truly do. But then I saw a headline, I think it was Variety, that said historic Oscar night. Two black people win Oscar, or two black people win Oscars, acting Oscars for the first time since 2007. It's like, how is that historic if it happened 7 years ago?
I know. It's these amazing stats that people put together.
And also, how is it diverse if it's just white and black people? What about the Hispanic people, the Indians, Asians?
You know what? It's an amazing thing that, like, and it's weird for me as a white person to talk about this. But, like, they're talking about racial diversity, and I'm going to tell you right now, I don't see racial diversity in the winners and nominees. What I see is I see white people and I see black people. I don't see Asians. I don't see Latinos. What I see is Jackie Chan up in the nosebleeds. They had a one Jackie Chan shot, and he's up in the nosebleeds. And I was like, well, that's terrific.
You know, they didn't even give Dev Patel a plus one. That's how rough it is for the non-whites
Dev
and blacks.
Patel's plus one was the young kid from Lion, or the boy from Jungle Book.
Well, actually, the young kid had to sit in his seat for the first half of the show. Second half of the show, then Dev Patel went to sit there.
Did you see the bit where Jimmy Kimmel was talking to the kid from Lion?
No,
I didn't. Oh, okay. He was asking, like, mostly yes or no questions, but the kid just said yes to everything. And at one point, you're like, I don't know if the kid actually speaks English. I don't think he understands. It's actually a pretty funny bit.
Well, they should have brought back the whole fork, salt, pepper thing from the movie. Lion's a really good movie, by the way.
So I was going to ask you about that. Yeah. You've been catching up on your Oscar nominees this weekend with Moonlight today. You saw Lion.
Yeah.
Did you see it on a screener that they sent us, or did you watch it in theaters?
So I got a hold of the brave little screener.
Okay, good.
It's actually VHS.
Oh, it's they sent me a VHS. Well, that's the screeners they send me is on VHS. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I have to go buy a VCR.
Right.
At Goodwill.
Well, I did.
What did you think of Lion?
So I liked Lion. It's not a great movie, but it's probably, after seeing it now, I'd say it's in my top 10 of 2016.
So, but you see it like very good. Is that what you're saying?
It's very good. It's a very good movie.
I really, it was a lot better than I was expecting.
Yeah. Same here.
Now it's interesting, and we didn't do a full episode on it, and I want to go like way off into it now, but like, I'm glad it got nominated for some stuff. It didn't win anything. It is two kind of halves of a movie. I did like the first half a lot more.
I think that's the better.
Yeah, it was just really strong visually. It was really, really, really strong. I did think Dev Patel did a heck of a job.
Patel's one of my favorite actors. He's so good. I love the movie Chappie. You guys hated it.
Oh yeah, you like Chappie.
I like it because I like Dev Patel and I like movies about robots. So. Well, I'm a simple man.
I love Short Circuit.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that also has a man from the Middle East cast.
No, not so much. I think it was a Jewish kid from Brooklyn in brown face.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's insane.
So I'm glad you liked Lion. It's a strong movie. And Rooney Mara wins. I mean, she'll win over, you know, my heart, your heart, anyone's heart.
Oh, she's the best. She's now my favorite actress in the world.
She's really good. So. Is she?
Sure, why not?
Let's talk about some other just some of the highlights from the ceremony in terms of who won. I was shocked that Manchester by the Sea did get their original screenplay over La La Land. Yeah. I knew that there was a chance it could win. I just thought La La Land was going to just sweep those types of categories.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it would too. And like, if we're being honest, I think Manchester by the Screen had the best screenplay.
Oh yeah, it did.
Manchester by the Sea. Yeah, but I think it was totally deserving of that.
Absolutely.
Award. And it was really great to see Lonergan go up there and just be like so coy and just he seemed really earnestly grateful for the win. So.
Yeah, he did. I actually am happy that Damien Chazelle won a Best Director Oscar. Out of the group, and again, it's hard because Moonlight, I haven't seen the whole thing yet.
You haven't seen the whole thing?
No, I haven't.
Oh,
I've seen about one third of the film.
And well, you saw the best part.
From what I've told, is the best part. Yeah.
Moonlight. It's really interesting. Barry Jenkins did a great job directing it.
Yeah.
The screenplay on that one, I would say, is pretty strong as well. It's just a movie that didn't grip me as much as say something like Manchester by the Sea or even Lion. So.
Well. I'm grateful Damien won it. I do think that, like, you know, whatever you want to say about La La Land, it's really hard to direct a film. I mean, it's really slickly directed, but to choreograph all that stuff, the music has to be perfect. He was involved in all of that. I still think directing a movie like that is very difficult. And so I think he deserved it. Also, I think he deserved a Best Directing Oscar for Whiplash. So there's part of me that's like, this guy deserves an Oscar, and so I am glad that he got it. I'm glad Casey won.
He's so awkward getting up there though.
But
I think that's true to who he is. So
yeah, I think it is true to who he is. Yeah.
For a minute I thought he might not win. I thought he might not. He might get upset in the just because he was also getting the bad press.
He was getting bad press.
But he kind of just powered through it, and thankfully he ended up winning, because I think he gave the best performance I saw the entire year. So yeah, well deserved.
Yeah, and I really hope he didn't do the things that he was accused of doing.
Well, even the accusations, I mean, it's bad, okay? But the accusations aren't as bad as some people want them to be for some reason.
They are playing them to be a little bit bigger than, I don't know, it's hard. It's a hard thing. I don't want to get into that too much, because I will get dangerously close to victim blaming.
I wouldn't do that. And if he did do those things, then, you know, he should be punished to the full extent of law, which actually the things that he was accused of is not a crime. It's a tort. So the full extent of the law would just be money that he would owe to the victims.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and the full extent of the law actually doesn't include withholding an Oscar from him that he deserves.
Exactly. Yeah. Completely separate act. I mean, has nothing to do with the... Okay, it's not like he's Roman Polanski, who is also celebrated by the Academy, by
the way. Yes, he is. Oh, he sure is. Yeah, time heals all crimes, apparently, for both Polanski, Mel and Polanski.
Yeah, no, Polanski is an animal. Like, he has no business still being in Hollywood.
Yeah, no, not at all. No, not at all.
It's disgusting.
Yeah, I totally agree. So I was trying to think of some other ones that were... they all played out the way we thought they would in terms of the main categories. Emma Stone winning, even though she's far from the best actress.
Yeah, how'd you feel about the Emma Stone one? Because I know
I knew it was going to happen, so I wasn't like outraged or anything, because I just expected it. But Ruth Negga from Loving was just like 1,000 times better. Literally 1,000 times better, I think. I don't know exactly how I do that math, but it's real.
I have your screener that you gave me of Loving.
Okay.
Sitting on my desk.
You got to watch it. It is a slow movie. I do have to warn people it's a slow movie, but it is so excellently acted. And I've watched so many documentaries on the real life couple that Ruth Negga channels the performance in there. She just really channels the real life character in a way that is unbelievable on screen. And she is so excellent. And I knew she didn't have a hope or a prayer of winning. And she didn't. And Emma Stone gave one of the least inspiring Academy speeches ever. Now, it's not their job to go up there and be inspiring or whatnot. Right. But you know what? You know what? I have an Academy speech. Ready right now. I have an Academy speech ready right now, and it's a lot more inspiring than hers.
Yeah,
and it's one I will never ever give.
Yeah. Hey, you don't know that someone might call your name by accident.
If we reach $100 a month on our Patreon listing, I will perform my Academy speech on this pod. So how about that for the plug? Patreon.com. I don't know if you have anything more to say about the Oscars.
No, I think that was about it. I did.
How about let's talk Kimmel's bit? where he brings in the people. Did you see this much?
No, I didn't actually.
Okay.
The only Kimmel thing I saw was the We Bought a Zoo.
Oh, okay.
Video which segment. That was funny.
He did Matt Damon hating throughout the whole thing, yeah. Which is, I don't know, it just never gets old to me. Excuse me. I think it's hilarious. No, so he did this bit where he grabbed about like a dozen tourists who thought they were going into an exhibit, but they were being led into the front door of the Nokia Theater in the middle of the live Oscars broadcast.
Oh, wow. It's so genius.
You have all these people walking in, and then they're immediately stunned, and he's telling them that they're live on TV at the Oscars, and they were like, they can't believe it. And they got their phones out, and he's bringing them in the front row in front of, you know, Ryan Gosling and Ben mm-hmm. Affleck and Meryl Streep. And, you know, it's hilarious to see. Like, you know, there was this black couple who are engaged, and they're telling Kimmel that because he's asking all these questions. And, mm-hmm. and he asks the woman, like, who's your favorite actor of all time? And she points at Denzel, and she's like, you know, that man right there. And then Denzel gets up and then does this fake marriage ceremony between them mm-hmm. two, like marries them. You know, it was like perfect. It couldn't have gone better. But seeing the look in their faces when the doors open up and they realize they're at the Oscars is pretty priceless. It's a
funny.
Really good – like, yeah. It was one of the best Oscar bits, mid-show yeah. Oscar bits I've ever seen. So
now, do we know if Cousin Sal happened to help write this?
Yeah, Cousin Sal was on the writing staff. And that's that sounds awesome. Like a Cousin Sal written
yeah.
bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he loves doing that. So, yeah, Cousin Sal was helping. So – That's all we have to share about the Oscars for now.
Wild night, though. Just incredible.
Yeah. Really?
What a finish.
Wow. Yeah, what a finish. We talked about doing the biggest Oscar snubs as our Patreon episode. For those of you listening to this, we release two episodes a week. This one you're listening to now. On Wednesday, we'll be releasing another one on our Patreon listing, which you can be accessed at www.patreon.com/bravelittlepodcast. $3 a month. You get double the episodes. I promise it's totally worth it. Plus a bunch of video stuff that mm-hmm. Aaron puts together and puts out. So if you like listening and viewing, this is probably a pretty good video pod. It's a lot of – I mean, this one right here is just a lot of laughing.
Yeah.
Because
no, this one's good. This one's special because you don't have your beard.
Yeah. So. That's true. The brave little beard is gone. Brave little mustache is there. Braver than ever. But what I was going to say was this, our Patreon listing episode, we were going to do the top five Oscar snubs, but we were given the terrible news this morning of Bill Paxton's passing. And so we're going to do a Paxton pod for our Patreon listing. And I'm going to tell you, it's going to be a heck of an episode. So those of you that are subscribed on Patreon, honestly, you're gonna have a great episode to look forward to. I'm really proud of the work we did on that one. And for those that want to listen to it, for those of you who love Bill Paxton, and for you know, and if you want to contribute to Bill Paxton's memory, go to patreon.com/bravelittlepodcast. Pay $3 a month and participate in the Paxton pods. Proceeds may or may not go into flowers that'll be sent to the Paxton family. You know, it may or may not happen. So, but just throw the $3 at us anyway.
I'm going to send them an e-card. So.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We will send them e-card and e-flowers. And so, check that out. But for now, we will get into our review of a film that has 100% rating on Rotten Tomatoes, certified fresh. There are three films in the modern age that have a 100% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. Aaron, can you name those three?
Batman versus Superman, Iron Man 3, and Hacksaw Ridge.
You nailed it. Oh my gosh.
Thank you.
So only three, I don't know what I'm going to define as the modern age, but three films that have 100% Rotten Tomatoes: Toy Story, Toy Story 2, and Terminator.
What?
Don't laugh at Toy Story 2. It's the best sequel since Godfather 2. That's actually true. But yeah, Terminator, the first Terminator, which is also funny because Terminator 2 is better. The first Terminator has 100%, Toy Story and Toy Story 2. Now, there are some documentaries that, like, they'll have, like, 50 reviews and 100%. We're not counting those. We're talking about movies that have over 100 reviews. And right now, there's those three. We're adding a fourth, and it is Jordan Peele's from Key & Peele, his directorial debut, Get Out. It has over 130 reviews registered on Rotten Tomatoes, and it is at 100%. This is very rare. This is a level of hype that's almost bad for a film, can almost sink a film. And this is a film that's very hard. It's very hard to get 100%, period, let alone one that's in the horror, and I will say horror slash thriller. We'll get to that in a minute. Horror slash thriller genre. This is going to be this was hyped to be a pretty controversial film, considering the kind of topic it was covering. I'm going to go ahead and tell you right now, it's only February, so this doesn't mean much. But this film is easily my favorite film of the year. And I it had me hook, line, and sinker, and I ate it up from top to bottom, beginning to end. I loved this movie, and I'll go into reasons why. Aaron, what did you think of Get Out?
So, Get Out. I will say that I liked it. Okay?
Oh!
I liked it.
Okay.
So if I had a vote on Rotten Tomatoes, I would give it a thumbs up.
Okay.
So I would be part of the 100%.
You'd be part of the 100%. Okay.
Yeah. But it's not a perfect movie.
No.
There's no reason for it to have 100% positive rating on Rotten Tomatoes. So.
I can agree with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can agree with that. I would give it a... I mean, I loved this movie. I would give it like an 88, 87%.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. I know. It's pretty high.
Yeah, that's pretty high. So I adjust the score for based on genre, and since this is a horror, this is a real horror movie.
Yeah,
I gave it a probably about a 72 to 75.
So oh,
it's pretty good. It's pretty good.
Okay, okay. So, I want you to break down. Now we're gonna go non-spoiler here.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
And because the spoilers too, I mean, it's just too important to the film.
Right.
It's. Give me your highlights. What did you like about this movie?
So the movie itself, I saw the trailer about a month ago, and I actually laughed at the trailer because it seemed so ridiculous. The marketing of this movie is it's essentially race baiting. Like, if we can be honest about something.
Okay.
They're portraying this as a completely racial movie.
Okay.
And I was kind of disappointed because it's not. It's not really like the whole racial thing is kind of a veneer. It's like a thin veneer for the movie.
It's interesting.
The movie is a psychological thriller.
That's
what it is. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a movie that the main crux of the movie is paranoia. Like that.
Yes.
That's the whole selling point. And that's really what works so well is the main character is completely paranoid at all times.
Yeah.
And he brings you along with that. And that's what I thought worked the best.
Was paranoia,
the tension, and
the very opening scene sets the tone for that paranoia and that tension so well with one of my favorite new actors, Keith Stanfield, who I just saw in Crown Heights, just saw at Sundance, and has done great work in Atlanta on FX.
Yep.
It opens with him on the phone walking through presumably a white suburban community in this neighborhood that's at night. It's like totally immaculate, clean streets. And he is walking, I believe, in a hoodie, if I recall, or in a jacket or something. And he is freaked out walking around this neighborhood. And you know what? I'm freaked out with him. It's really incredible. This is not a white person walking through the projects, right? It's a black person walking through a white neighborhood. And I felt real fear. Because of the way that they're shooting there's a lot that's going on, but that tension and paranoia is set by what I thought was just a really great opening scene that turns into this musical this song as this, and I won't go into exactly what happens to him, but the song starts playing and the credits start rolling. And I was like, oh, this is going to be interesting.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah. That cold open was a great touch. I love that.
Yeah.
It's really well done.
Now you say that this isn't a racial movie.
So, okay. So let me clarify.
Yeah.
There's definitely elements of race.
Yes.
But the way that the movie is marketed, the way that they got people to talk about this movie was to say there's a black man going into a white neighborhood.
Yep.
And the sentiment is that he should get out.
Yeah.
Like, this is literally the name of the movie is Get Out.
Yeah.
And I think one of the posters has a question mark. Are you supposed to be in this neighborhood or something like that?
Yeah.
I mean, that's
That actually isn't a part of the movie.
No, it's not in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
And so that's brilliant marketing because it's playing on, you know, the racial tensions that are in American society at the moment. So that's marketing 101, right? So that's a great job. But I don't think that Jordan Peele set out to make a racial movie where he's challenging the status quo or he's challenging the viewer, really. He set out to make a horror movie.
Yeah.
And the setting that he created was one where race is involved.
Yeah.
But that just leads to the paranoia. And I think that the two just really play to each other really well. So I think this is a great script. And I think for a first time director, Jordan Peele knocked it out of the park. So,
yeah, I really thought he did too. As considering how much of this is filmed on location.
Mm-hmm.
I think I expected a lot more humor than was in there. Because as the trailers did make it, it was semi-race baiting. I think you're right there after seeing, you know, the film. It was, but I also, because it's Jordan Peele, I thought this would be like a very, very wink-wink, tongue-in-cheek. It mm-hmm. wasn't as tongue-in-cheek as I was expecting. Totally agree. The only comedy is his friend that works at the TSA, which I thought, you know, he actually was pretty funny. But it's filmed all in one location. This was a $4.5 million budget, which means that that movie's going to make a lot of money.
Yeah.
And it has. I think it's opening to like around $30
million. Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah.
Good for him. Yeah. That's great to hear.
Yeah, no, it's really great because I think Jordan Peele is an incredibly creative mind. And I'm really glad.
Super talented.
I was listening to him on a podcast, the Nerdist podcast with Chris Hardwick, and he explained that, you know, he really loves horror genre and that there's just, you know, there's too many bad horror films because you can make them for pretty cheap. And when one hits big, it can hit real big. Like, right. Think of the Blair Witch Project and not the most recent one, which actually did really bad.
Yeah.
But like, you know, it's, you can spend very little and make a ton, right? It's mm-hmm. it's a kind of a cash grab genre, and he wanted to contribute quality. And I felt like he did. Now, whether this is a horror film or a thriller, or how, like, whether that should be considered both or whatnot, I 100% agree with you when you describe it as a psychological thriller. That's exactly what this is. Now, what's interesting about the racial commentary, I will say, is that Jordan Peele does give you a lot of, like, what it might be like in his shoes to experience it as a black man in a white community or family, all the comments that are being made to him.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, that's as racial as it gets. Right. In the sense that, you know, it's like the dad saying he would have voted for Obama for a third term if he could have. Which, you know.
Or calling him my man. That was funny.
My man. So Bradley Whitford, I thought, was terrific.
Oh, he was fantastic.
I thought he was so good. And now this main guy, Daniel, I can't pronounce his last name. It's like Kaluuya.
Yeah. He was in Sicario.
He was in Sicario, which I thought he was great in. He was great in this movie.
Fantastic.
Allison Williams, is that her name, as his girlfriend? Also terrific.
Rose. Yeah.
The junkie brother, the Macaulay Culkin.
I thought he looked like Matt Stafford, the quarterback for the Lions.
He did. Yes. He looked exactly like
Matt. He really does.
Matt Stafford's he has a Matt Stafford coked out brother. That's great. And Catherine Keener.
Yeah.
Who
fantastic.
I literally bumped into Catherine Keener at a Sundance, after a Sundance screening, and I ended up riding a bus with her to the next theater and having a conversation with her the whole way. Delightful woman.
Yeah.
I mean, super down to earth.
Please tell me she was stirring a cup of tea.
Well, I was. It was hypnotic.
just one quick thing about Bradley Whitford.
Yeah.
I haven't liked him this much in a movie since Billy Madison.
I was going to say Billy Madison. So. Billy Madison's the last, it's like, really is the last great thing. He is so good in this. Bradley Whitford just nails it. And when I look at a budget of $4.5 million, that tells me that Catherine Keener and Bradley Whitford did not do this movie for money.
No.
I mean, they did not get paid. Very much.
Unfortunately,
I mean,
they deserved it though.
Yeah, I thought they both did great. So he put together a great cast. Lakeith Stanfield, like I said, is awesome.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And don't forget Stephen Root as well.
Stephen Root, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was about to give. I didn't want to say a spoiler there. But I will. So back to the whole racial component of this. I found this really fascinating. The spoiler here, the reveal, the surprise ending, if you will. And you can argue whether it's a surprise or not. I don't know. Some of it's telegraphed. But I without telling what it is, it actually, for me, took off the biting racial commentary. Because it became about something a little bit different. While it still applies, and I still think it's allegorical to slavery and other components that we can, you know, we could really dive into, and which we won't because we're not going into spoilers. But the way they described what was actually happening here, it became a lot less about race. And right. I found that a really interesting decision. And Jordan Peele, like I referenced listening to him on the Nerdist podcast, he insisted that this is not a movie about how all white people are bad. And he wanted to make sure that was clear, right? The trailers, by the way, do not make that clear.
No, it doesn't. Not at all.
But I also, as a marketer, I feel like the people who made those trailers did exactly what they had to do.
Brilliant. I mean,
it was really good.
Sold the crap out of it.
Yes.
Great job.
And this movie is not a movie about how all white people are bad. It's not that at all, actually. It's this community of white people that are crazy AF.
Well, so here's the thing. So if this movie is made 40 years ago, 30 years ago, you know, you can do the exact same premise.
Which is Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, Sidney Poitier.
Exactly. Right. And that's in the 60s, right?
Right, right.
So, or even if you make this in the 80s, you can have a black guy coming to Thanksgiving or whatever. Mm-hmm. And the attitudes that the white family is going to express towards this black character, it's going to be completely different than what it is today in 2017. So you can call these people racist because of some of the things, some of the white guilt that they express.
Yeah.
But if this is made 30 years ago, they're outwardly racist.
They're not even trying
to see his point of view or give him the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
I mean, they just flat out don't like him because he's black.
Right.
So, and I thought that was an interesting commentary on today versus, you know, if you made this movie 30 years ago, even.
Yeah.
No, it's so just, that's progress to me. That's progress.
It is progress. It is progress. It's an interesting thing because we still like, it's this thing where we want to admit progress, but we don't want to say we've arrived or that we're post
racial,
right. We're not. Yeah.
Of course not. And we never will be.
No,
that's
we won't
the reality
be.
Of
yeah.
things.
You're right.
So, I mean, you just have to work towards being better every day, which is a cliche, obviously, but this is, that's the reality.
Yeah, it is.
You have to make an effort.
It is.
And, So how did you feel about, because at one point the movie does turn into a straight horror. It goes beyond a psychological thriller and
for
becomes
a moment,
a horror film.
For like an act.
How did you feel about that, those choices?
So it was probably my least favorite component of the film, and I loved the movie. But that's because it introduced it started introducing screeching violins when someone walks behind you in the background. And these kind of cliches. It kind of started, like, you know, this is in the trailer, but the scene where the guy's in the middle of the night, he's running directly at him and then runs to the side, that ends up being all for naught. There's no reason why that actually happened. When the movie ends, you think, like, wait, why would he have run directly at him and then to the side? And there's no actually good reason for that.
You didn't believe the reason in the movie?
No. I was fine with it going straight horror, especially, are you talking about like the third, the last act?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and I'm curious to know your thoughts on how you liked that. I loved the ending in this movie. I loved the ending. I loved the, there's this part with police lights that I really liked. And I
that was
really,
such a great movie.
It was so great. And I thought it was brilliant. And it ended, the very ending really ends in a very non-horror movie way, and without giving away what that is. And I thought it was perfect for the film. Yeah.
Yeah, so there's a tone throughout the movie that's pretty consistent. It's a relationship between the best friend and our main character.
Yeah.
At some point there's a resolution there between the two. And I felt like the resolution was correctly in tone with the rest of the movie. So I agree. I felt like Jordan Peele handled that very well. The bit that you get that you spoke about, the police lights. I mean, that was genius.
Oh,
that was
so genius.
It was such a great little touch. I'm glad that he included that.
Yeah.
And you know, when that happened, I actually started to think, like, start to panic. Like, what's he going to do?
Yeah, so did I. It's like, how? Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I thought it was really good.
Yeah, yeah. And again, so like at that moment again, we had paranoia again. So,
yeah.
I mean, Jordan Peele, man. And also, of the two, Key and Peele,
yeah.
I'm a much bigger fan of Jordan Peele.
Totally. 100% agree with you. 100% agree. I think he's the more creative mind.
I think so too. And there's something about Key that it's just, he's a little pretentious. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just the interviews, it comes off that way.
Yeah.
But I think Jordan Peele is, in general, he's funnier too. So.
Yeah. I think I'm with you there. I really am. I know Skyler right now probably wishes he could jump in because he is a Key defender.
Oh, he absolutely
loves him.
Oh, man.
He loves him.
He's a total fanboy of Key.
Yeah, there's no question.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think Jordan, first off, I think he directed a heck of a movie. I think he wrote a better one.
Oh, yeah.
And so agreed. I am pumped to see what he does next. Because in that genre, which is one that's got a lot of cliches, it's got a lot of baggage, it's probably the easiest to start out in because of the fact you can do it, like in this case, almost entirely in one location, so pretty limited budget, $4.5 million. But I'm really excited to see what he does now in, in action films, in straight dramas, in, like, I'm really, really excited to see where his career goes because when you debut with this, right? Now, granted, this is not someone that just came. He's not like a Damien Chazelle that just came right out of film school and started necessarily.
Right. He's not even a Barry Jenkins. Barry Jenkins, he had nothing on his resume. Really,
nothing.
He had a short film before he made Moonlight.
So this Jordan Peele has had a very creative background to build upon. He's been a part of a lot of films to be able to see how it works. Right. So it's not exactly a rags to riches story in that sense, but now that he is officially established as a writer director and not just this comedian, I just think this is his role. Like, I think this is where he is going to be able to contribute the most, in terms of his creative output.
Right.
I'm pumped to see where his career goes. I really am.
Yeah. I mean, if I'm being honest, I have to say that my least favorite things about the movie, were the comedic elements. And I felt like those fell flat.
You didn't like the TSA guy as much as I did.
I mean, it was okay. It was okay, but it was not hilarious by any means. And you would think that Jordan Peele, he's a funny guy, but the worst part of his movie was the comedic elements.
Well, the worst scene in the film is a comedic part for me, and that's when the friend is trying to explain to the police what's going on. That was actually a pretty painful scene.
It drags.
It did drag. It was really weird. You could cut that entire thing out. And keep going. Although the runtime was fine, I felt like it was the right length. But that was the one part I do agree. It was meant for comedy and it didn't play well.
No.
But I think the reveal was handled excellently. And it just gave you little by little in a way that it really built tension in a pretty great way.
Okay, so man, I kind of want to. I'm not going to spoil it. Obviously.
Okay. Well, we're right at the end.
Okay, but I just want to get your opinion on one last thing.
Yeah.
So there's a moment where our lead character stumbles on some information.
Yes. This is where the reveal begins to unravel, right?
Right. So did that feel cheap to you? Because that kind of felt cheap to me.
So I will say this. It wouldn't have been cheap if... okay. How about this? Thank you for listening to this episode. Hold on to your butts. Thanks for listening. This is great. I'm going to go into spoilers for about 3 minutes. We're not going to go fully in depth, I'm just going to go lightly into spoilers so you can stick around if you want.
It's not a massive spoiler, but it is a spoiler.
It is a spoiler. I'm going to go into a spoiler.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. Turn off. You got 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Spoiler. Okay, I'm going into it. The door opens and you see the pictures that reveal that his girlfriend is in on this whole operation. Okay? I'm not going to explain what the operation is. I'm only going to give the spoiler away that his girlfriend is in on it. It didn't bother me because I thought that the open door was purposeful and that when he closed it, it was going to reveal her or the mom or someone being like, now you know, and things are going to keep going, right? But when it closed, and then it was like they still didn't know he saw it.
Yeah,
that's where it is cheap.
Right. So why I felt it was cheap is because you have that open door and there's essentially a spotlight on it, and he goes in there.
Yeah.
And the very first thing that he sees is a shoebox with all the evidence,
yeah,
laying out all the details.
Well, that's the thing, is that it had to have been done that on purpose, right? Like,
right.
First off, yeah, she doesn't carry those pictures in a stack together, because that's awfully incriminating.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I actually have a question. So after that, after they go through the whole ordeal, you see those pictures again. Did you notice that?
No.
Yeah, so they're on the wall. There's a scene
in the house, or like, yeah, in the torture chamber dungeon.
No, in the house, behind the girl. Yeah. Wait. So they're actually on the wall and they're framed behind her.
Wait, were all they there the pictures. Whole? Do you think they were there the whole movie though?
I don't know. I don't know, because she's in a different room. She's not in the room that they were staying.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, I don't know.
Interesting. I love, yeah, I by the way, I love the scene of her on the computer and she types in NCAA prospects.
So that was probably the funniest moment for
it
me.
Was. It
that was the biggest laugh that I had.
It was.
Yeah.
It was so good. Well,
all in all, good movie.
Yeah, it was. You know, we talked about February. There's not a lot of great films, but I enjoyed Great Wall. You didn't. I enjoyed John Wick 2. I enjoyed, what else did we see the same week?
Lego's Batman.
What's that?
Oh. Lego's Batman.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Lego's Batman. And Get Out, to me, is my favorite film of the year. It's going to make my top 10 end of the year. I just strongly doubt that there will be 10 films that I love more. I mean, it might be number 10, but I don't think there's going to be 10 films that I love more than this one. I think it's going to crack the top 10 somewhere. And so, yeah. Any other thoughts on Oscars or Get Out?
No, I think we covered it all.
Okay. Well, great.
Get out and see the movie.
Seriously, check it out. Get out. Get out of the house. Go see it. and my apologies to the folks at PricewaterhouseCoopers. And my apologies to the producers of La La Land.
Oof, ouch.
You're a Hall of Famer in my book, as Denzel would say. Remember the Titans. Okay. All right, that's it, folks. Hope you enjoy the Oscars. Go see Get Out. As we say,
hold on to your butts. Thank you for listening to the Brave Little Podcast. Hold on to your butts.